right. It's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we have a special guest joining us tonight. My dad, Joe Novak, the former defensive coordinator here at Indiana University, also the head coach at Northern Illinois, and has a new job here. We'll talk to him a little bit in the future here about, but you're on the Committee of Infractions. And you're retired technically, but you're joining the Committee of Infractions for the NCAA, so you get to be the judge and jury.
Go get them! Right? Go get them!
It's really, really interesting. Again, I got time. I'm retired, so that's what I told him. I said I got time, and I'm interested. So it has been interesting. I'm just starting on it, of course, and really still observing. But I got my first case coming up in January, and again, it's interesting.
We'll talk about the procedures and what it all takes and what it all looks like on the inside. And don't worry, I have already hit him up to go after John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats. I don't know that he's listening, but we're trying desperately to get that in place. But lots to talk about tonight as we take you to 7:45 and our coverage of Monday Night Football, Washington and Dallas. Tonight, so we're with you for a long time. We could talk NBA or NCAA football playoffs. We can talk NFL as the Colts go down in rather emphatic fashion last night in Pittsburgh. But we start off with college basketball as the Hoosiers, when we signed off last on Wednesday night, took their trip down to Durham and took the waxing by the Blue Devils. It was good for about 8 or 10 minutes for the Hoosiers, but ultimately the defense let them down. And Glass, we talked about on Wednesday, you know, you got to expect that this team, that Indiana University, would compete down there in Durham. And certainly we were excited for 8 or 10 minutes of game time, but then a lot of the old same things reared their ugly head. And unfortunately to me, look, if you're going to be bad at something, you're going to be bad at something. But when you look bad and confused, that's a really bad combination. And it reared its head again. We saw it last year and we saw it earlier this year and we saw it maybe at its worst on Wednesday night in Duke.
Maybe that doesn't happen in practice because all we hear is how great practice is going. So why would you stop? If you don't know, if you have a practice and it works and you think, well, we've been working on
it. Do it again, right?
Well, you have to play it in the game, don't you? But the problem is Duke's a little bit better than the second team you're running that defense against. And that's just how these things work out. But what Indiana, the problem with the Indiana was, you know it's going to be a tough place to play. You know it's going to be a tough environment to play. And you know it's a good team to play against. And you know 8 minutes isn't enough.
Right.
That's not even a quarter of the game. And I think that's the frustrating part of it. I don't want to hear about how hard Troy's playing with 11 minutes to go with a steal and a dunk to cut the lead to 23. It doesn't interest me. That doesn't do it for me. How did you get to the 25-point deficit? That's the part that you're interested in. But thankfully, Murray State or whoever came to town, Morehead State came to town on Saturday, and everything was fixed and whatever. But the problem is you can't play hard when you want to play hard. Not against good teams. And my whole angle of my – I don't want to call it a rant because I don't think that's fair, but the angle I have with this basketball team is if you want to be good, fine. Go be good. You can be good. You have enough talent to fall off the bus and be good. If you want to be greater elite, you have to play better. You have to be more prepared. You have to take every opponent seriously. It can't be, well, we're fired up for the first 8 minutes of the Duke game. That doesn't – what does that win you? What banner is that going to hang?
Nothing.
It doesn't.
No.
And that's the next step in growth. This team could win 20 games. This team could win 28 games. And there is a whole lot of in-between in there. You're not going to play the OVC, contrary to popular belief, every week. You're 3-0 in the Eastern Conference there. You've beaten Morehead State, Eastern Illinois, and Austin Peay. That's the good news. But that's not going to Wisconsin. That's not playing Michigan State. That's not taking on even a bad Ohio State team who lost 3 or 4 games in a row. Mm. There's a chance to be really good. But you can't play the same way you've been playing. Things have to change. The effort has to get better, and the consistency has to get better. You can't do it one night and make an 18-0 run on Morehead State and say, well, we've got that figured out. That's not the case. That's not how it works. But I don't know what they're going to learn against an IPFW team that got beat by 17 or 19 at Utah. And then it's McNeese State on this weekend, the week off, and then
it's Notre Dame. That's
right. Look at it this way.
And that's an offensive team.
If you don't beat Notre Dame, you're 1-5 in neutrals.
Yeah, and you got no. I mean, Creighton
in
is your
neutrals
one win.
In a way.
Creighton is your best win.
And
overall.
Creighton got beat at Loyola of Illinois on Saturday.
Right.
Don't look that up. That'll ruin your whole argument on that. Don't look.
Well, I didn't
that
say
up.
They were good. I just said they're one good win.
Don't look that up because they were in the top 50 for a minute. But if you're having to look at top 50 wins, top 100 wins on the 8th day, 9th day, 7th day of December, Well, you've dug the hole. There's only one way to get out of it. You got to play better. You got to work harder, and you have to get after it. We heard earlier in the season that the bench was going to be the friend. The bench was going to be the guy that's going to get everybody's attention. That hasn't been the case because he hasn't found next guys to step into those roles. He hasn't found guys that he can be truly too deep. His words, not mine. He hasn't found that yet. So
no, they settled into eight. And really, I mean, if you watch the play out there, I don't know that you would argue it should go much deeper than eight. Those are your best players as it is. What's frustrating to me, as I mentioned,
they can go eight. Just it's not going to go eight.
And they're going to try to go 9-10 with OG and Juwan Morgan if he ever comes back. But what's frustrating to me is then what you saw on Saturday. And I was happy to see it on Saturday. I would have rather see it on Wednesday.
What, at home against a poor team?
I understand that. Well, but my point there is there was far better effort on the defensive end and on the rebounding end.
Why does it take a 20-point beating at Duke to get that effort out?
Which shows you it's available.
That's right.
Which shows you it's there, and that makes you wonder, like you said, why does it not show up at a Duke or something like that?
Is it better? Sure, it was better. It's still Morehead State.
And
you're not going to prove, and you're not going to win anybody back over, and you're not going to win the NCAA tournament committee over playing better against Morehead State.
Does it do you any good to play a cupcake? You're coming off a game against Duke. It's on national television. It's the centerpiece game the way they scheduled it in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You get your doors blown off. You don't have a real good effort on one end of the floor. You come back against a cupcake, and everybody says, why are you playing all these cupcakes? I can't help you. Does it help you? I mean, I know you have to have games on your schedule.
You usually don't get much better playing people that are way below your level.
Right.
Those are paydays. You know that. I mean, there's teams that are brought in here. They want to get so many wins, and it's a payday. Morehead State or whoever it was got their pay and went home.
Is developing confidence anything?
Oh, sometimes. And you can work with your depth, hopefully, if you get up front and that type of thing. But overall, I don't think you get much better playing that type of competition. You get better playing people that are as good as you or better.
But in basketball, Joe, I think it's different because guys don't want to schedule, because if they're sitting there before they enter league play and they're 8-4, 7-5, quote unquote, their season's over unless they make something unbelievably happen out of it. And you have to have these games. Everybody will point, well, Michigan State doesn't play these guys. Well, you play three or four really good
teams. Well,
everybody's
got some out there.
But here's my point. The opportunity for Indiana to do that was in Hawaii.
Right.
They didn't beat Wake Forest.
Right.
They didn't get Kansas. They didn't get UCLA. They didn't get that other half of the bracket that should have been those other games. Well, that was their own doing because they didn't win.
I'm not going to make Morehead State and the way they played against Morehead State to be anything other than one particular game to show
they
you
should win that game.
What they can do in one game. But the question to me is, after the Duke game and after Maui and all that sort of thing,
was Alcorn State before that?
Can playing a glorified scrimmage against somebody who doesn't know all your play calls, I mean, does that help at all? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, it should, because
that's frustrated me because I saw something I didn't see in Duke or in Maui.
My angle,
and I wanted to see it at Duke and in Maui.
80% of their schedule are those teams.
Yeah.
So you have to take something from it because that's who you're playing. Alcorn State, Austin Peay, Eastern Illinois, Morehead State, IPFW, McNeese State. Kennesaw State lost 87-54 at West Virginia on Saturday, in case you're keeping track of that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's seven. That's seven games you've scheduled on your own of teams that were wherever they are. And last year, if you want to bring up last year's schedule and go back and see what their RPI was 300 and something.
Right.
So this is your doing. These are teams you should beat. Has it gotten Indiana any better? Indiana started the Big Ten season 5-1 last year. So I guess you could make the argument, yeah, it did help. But they finished the Big Ten season 5-10.
Right.
Won one, lost one in the tournament, and lost their first game of the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So is it how you finish? Is it how you begin? Is it what's in the middle? I think the answer is yes. It's all part of that. 30 games, 31 games. Tom Creamer reminded us all after the Duke games. It's December 3rd.
December 3rd, right.
Okay, now it's December 8th, and you've beaten Morehead State.
Sweet.
Well, you can't beat Michigan State playing Morehead State.
Not yet, no.
But you have to beat Morehead State, and that's what they did. Is it the journey? Is it more exciting than the destination? I'm not sure. But this team has two choices. They can be really good because they have enough talent to be really good, and they can be really good, and everybody's saying, why are you guys only really good? You have this, and that. And there's only two things to be if you're Indiana basketball, relevant or irrelevant. You pick, because Indiana fans, 20-10 doesn't get you out of bed. 20-10 doesn't get you national TV games with Duke.
No.
It doesn't.
And with
this
out of conference, you'd think you're heading to 20 kind of automatically. But they got bigger goals than that. I think we all have bigger goals than that for this Hoosier team. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stephen Glass with you in the Zone. right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Special guest joining us tonight, Joe Novak. We'll talk a little football, talk a little defense. We'll talk a little NCAA Committee of Infractions joined the committee here just recently and about to hear some cases at the beginning of the new year. But we're talking IU basketball right now. And, you know, the question is, look, the Duke game is over. The outrage is there, but it's gone. It's not gone. It's behind us, at least to some degree, if you choose to have it be so. So the question is, where do you go from here? And look, the other night I watched the game at least a little bit here. I thought the defensive effort was better. It has to be. I mean, it will have to be going forward. But the question
story
is,
would have been if it wasn't any better.
Well, exactly right.
That would have been the story. That would have been the angle.
That would have been the thing. But the question is, how do you keep it there? That's the question. You've got a team that looks to me, not only do they look confused, but to me they look disinterested on the defensive end. They like the offensive end. They're an offensive team. That's what they want to be. But the effort just isn't good enough on the defensive end. So the question is, how do you keep it going, and how do you keep them interested when they do have a couple cupcakes upcoming? Because it's got to keep going that direction.
Well, obviously in basketball compared to football is the number of games you're playing too.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to compare those two. In football, you only play 12. And we always use the moniker that, you know, you guys, we always really strive for commitment. Our off-season program was tough. It was at 6 in the morning. It was difficult. It was hard. The summertime, they were all there working in the heat. It was hard. And those kids made a tremendous commitment. And I'm sure the basketball players do, too. But then we only had 12 games to play in football. Mm-hmm. And I told those kids, if you can't fire up to play 12 with all the effort you've put in all off-season,
right,
there's something wrong with you. And
what
we
you
never
for?
Really had much of a thing. But basketball, you got 30,
yeah,
and you don't have to be good until Big Ten, because that's going to get you into. You always got the tournament.
There's always something
else,
and
that's really the season now. You can be, you're not going to get in, but you could be 6-19, and if you got in the tournament because of a playoff, you got a chance.
Well, let's be fair. A lot of the teeth gnashing over Tom Crean has been, despite a Big Ten championship, they lost in the Sweet 16 to Syracuse. I mean, that's a lot of people that turned them off of Tom Crean because of that alone, despite a Big Ten championship.
On to coach's point, on the football, you got 11 that play on one side and 11. To play on the other. In basketball, you got to have guys doing the same thing. When you're beating Alcorn State by 40 points in the first half, how do you yell at a guy for playing defense?
Right,
you're up. Okay. And when you play those cupcakes or the guys that the teams aren't going to compete and challenge you, when are your kids getting challenged? Is it practice? Is it drills in practice? Is it watching film in practice? Because any player will tell you, when you guys were beating people 56-7, your defense wasn't busting it. They were doing just enough to get it done, and you hoped all that other practice time would allude to it. But the problem was Duke, Wake Forest, UNLV, you got into games, into dogfights, out of games where you beat people pretty handily, and the first times they were involved with that, things didn't get better.
You know, one thing not to overlook, I think, too, is your team leadership.
Right.
And I don't know. I haven't followed Indiana basketball, but leadership is so important. Your seniors usually, and sometimes it's some underclassmen, but those kids set the tempo too. And if you don't have that solid leadership, it's hard sometimes to get some of those things done like you like.
Well, and Tom Crean said over the summer in the at the tailgate tour, I think, throughout the state, the various areas, he said specifically if he had a leader on his team he would have talked about him. And so that tells you a little bit about what they've got behind the scenes. They're looking for some people to fill that in. And they've got a couple seniors on this team, and they've got one who's got a chance at All Big Ten and maybe All American, but it's not there.
That's where the scheduling doesn't help you, because you get into a mindset of, hey, you have to play defense, but you're playing a team that you only have to play defense for 5 minutes, and then you're up. It's 13-12, you're down. You go on an 18-0 run. It's 35-13,
right,
and the game
is
over, because you know at Assembly Hall they're not going to come back.
Right.
And that's what it was. So after having some hiccups in Maui, you come home and play an Alcorn State team that was 0-5, but they put up their best offensive numbers of the year.
Yeah.
You go to Duke, you know you're going to get the full money from them, and then, okay, now you've played one in a row. The best thing you do is you put the wall up. You say you've played
one in a row.
Exactly. Let's take that one apart and then move it on to IPFW and then McNeese State and then Notre Dame.
You know, defense, too, is attitude and effort. And
rebounding,
those are controllables.
Amen.
Those are control. You go into a game with an attitude. You go in a game and either give or don't give effort. And that's what offense is a little different. That's a skill thing.
Mm-hmm.
But defense is attitude and effort, and those are controllables.
333-2665 is a phone number. We have a call here. We have Jay on the line. Hello, how you doing, Jay?
Hey, how you doing, guys? And Coach, welcome aboard. Great to have you down here in Bloomington.
Thank you.
I think there's one, and I know what people say, statistics are for losers, but I think there's one statistical fact from this last game that's being lost in all of this, and it's going to come back and haunt you. They got all these turnovers, but they were only manufacture a little less than one, a little more than 1 point per turnover.
Yeah, but when you're up 40, it's one of those things.
That,
yeah.
That all gets back to efficiency.
I'd still take my chance with 23 turnovers forced a game.
If you're going to be this, I mean, you saw with the Phoenix Suns, I want to say maybe 15 years ago, they tried to run this offensive scheme where they didn't care how many points the other team was going to score. They were just going to run down the court and score 130 points, and whatever happens, happens, and they would end up losing games 134 to 130. You know, Coach Novak, you know that this old saying in football, you know, defense wins championships. And I think it's the same. It goes the same way in basketball. Is everybody can score in basketball. There's very few teams at the Big Ten level that can't score points. But what differentiates you from being that top echelon team within the Big Ten as opposed to being in the middle or the bottom is your team's ability to play defense. Wisconsin has been where they are over the years because they play tenacious defense. No matter how talented they are, they have a defensive scheme. Every single kid knows where he's supposed to be, and they know what they're going to do because they have a routine set in place. And I harp on this constantly.
Jay, when's the switch going to flip? Should I wait till next week, or should I wait till the Big Ten season? Mark, when is the switch going to flip for Indiana?
I don't think it's a switch that's got to flip. I think it comes down to the simplistic fact of KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Sure.
Install a defensive system that every single kid clearly understands and knows where they're supposed to be on the court every single play, so that you're not they're not worried about this. Well, am I a man or am I half zone?
They went complicated last year, and they certainly went complicated earlier this year. That's the one thing that that stood out to me a little bit against Morehead State, is it seemed much simpler. And
right.
I don't know if that was a direct result of getting a better defensive effort
their
or not.
Their defense looked great
way
against Morehead State because Brandon Ingram, Miles Plumlee,
well, of course.
And all those other Duke guys.
But
were
if you watch him
Morehead
again,
State.
If you're watching him play, and I'm you know, you and I, we watch the actual dude in his stance rather than just watching the ball everywhere on the court. You know, it was better and it was simpler to me. I mean, they weren't switching 800,000 times.
You know,
I don't remember seeing a zone.
And the other part is Jay, they look good when they're bullying guys by 25. At home in Bloomington, it's a lot easier to play hard then.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I said this last week when I spoke to you guys. If you watch, even Alcorn State did it to us, and it worked for them. When any team that runs an overload set,
they run a single man side,
our help side defense is garbage. It's atrocious.
Absolutely.
It's terrible, and that's coaching. That's saying to the kid, look. If it's man-on-man and he dribble drives, you've got to get to the elbow to help him out. And that's either not being coached or the kids aren't figuring it out.
Yeah, and Jay, I want you to remember, too, after the Duke game, there was about 600 pieces of stuff. And, Jay, we're up against a break, buddy. Good job, as always.
Thanks for the call, Jay.
There's 600 pieces written from every college basketball expert from sea to shining sea. You had ways, how are you going to beat Indiana?
Right.
Well, Morehead State doesn't have those players to beat Indiana in the ways that Duke does. You say, hey, Thomas Bryant has a huge time guarding screen and roll. So you bring Bryant's man out to screen. You run screen and roll with Bryant because he can't move his feet.
Sure, but
Well, Morehead State can't do that. Exactly. They don't have a guy who can run that play. So that's where
and then Miles Plumlee to out rebound
sure.
to push him around.
So Jay's point is right. Keep it simple, stupid. You have to have some form of disciplinary rules defensively that everybody buys into and everybody knows on each possession. This is what has to happen. But when one guy breaks down, it's just like anything else. Then the next guy tries to do his job. Then somebody else has to do his job. And then there's spacing and everything else all over the court.
Let me ask you this: can you play the best teams, the most talented teams on your schedule, and just keep it as simple as humanly possible?
Well, again, I'm far from a basketball expert.
I know
when we coach
you're going up
football.
Against Tom Brady. Can you show him one look
all day
long and just try to do it
well?
That
was the way Bill Mallory and we did things here. If we made mistakes on defense when I was coaching, I took it personal. I felt it was my fault. Either we were doing too much or I wasn't teaching it well enough. So we did. We kept it simple. And there were times maybe we wanted to reach in that bag and pull more out than we had. Mm-hmm. But I know this. We didn't kill ourselves very often. We might have got beat some, but very seldom did we beat ourselves because we were.
You know what?
We were simple.
IU fans, they're fine with getting beat. They're fine if you got more talent, right. But if they're beating you up the court, right. If they're beating you to lose
balls.
Brandon
Ingram shooting over the top of your head because you're right all over him all day
Wednesday
long.
Night. Yeah, exactly. I said on Wednesday night, if Ingram's going to get 30 and beat you, well, right. you're probably not going to win. And I didn't mean for him to
do it. Well, don't they
keep actually loose, do it. Yeah.
Loose balls, isn't that an effort stat?
I think so. So is rebounding. Yeah. Dennis Rodman wasn't 7 foot right. seven. He right. worked
that's
harder than
that. That's an effort stat.
And so is getting back on defense. And so is wanting to play defense. It's effort because you are not tied to a position by law where the official says, oh, no, you have to stay in that box until it goes over. It doesn't happen that way.
In college football, you generally have the two platoons. So you've got the offense and you've got the defense. When you look and you recruit people, what would you look for a defensive guy? What makes you think this guy's going to be good on defense as opposed to this guy wants to just catch the ball and run with it?
I think you always want to see toughness on defense. And I think that's true in basketball, too. I mean, again, the toughness is a little bit of the mental toughness, too. And I always think that's the first thing. And certainly somebody that likes to play hard with great effort, that's defense. Like I said, it's attitude and effort, and that's what you're looking for in those kids. And certainly you like them when they're 6'5", 275, that can run 4'5".
We all want Shalik Calhoun at defensive end. Yeah.
But even sometimes those kids don't play with great effort because they have so much talent. But again, it's always attitude and effort on the defensive side. Offensively, you got to have skill.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing moving forward for this team is there's no free agent window. There's no trade deadline. The players you have are the players you have. They're competing daily in practice. And until, as a collective group, as a couple of individuals, I don't know how this is going to be, but you have to find somebody that's going to be the junkyard dog. You're going to have to find somebody that's going to take this team by the scruff of the neck. And here's what people don't want to hear. Just because you have a team organized doesn't mean that happens. There are rudderless ships
absolutely
sailing throughout the night.
And I think Tom Crean told you over the summer that he's not sure there's a rudder.
And you haven't heard Tom Crean in September,
October,
November, December 3rd, pointing out how it's gotten better, how somebody's stood up and done that. So,
well, remember, you guys also said it, too, and you're exactly correct. In football, you're either offense or defensive player. In basketball, you're playing
both. You have to do both.
Some kids, obviously, as is the case, a great skill on offense, but they can't. Kevin Love for the Cavaliers, great skill on offense.
Great rebounder.
He's an awful defensive player.
But that's it.
Great rebounder.
That's
it.
He's got
two on defense. You know,
he is.
They give a little bit. So
you have to.
They're all different.
Because Love's 6'11", and can shoot from 25 feet, and he grabs 10 rebounds rolling out of bed.
So we've got a pair of cupcakes coming up this week. To me, the only thing you take out of this week is, do you keep that consistent? Because, again, I thought it was better against Morehead State. I understand it's supposed to be. I get that. It doesn't make up for Duke. I'm not going to argue that.
Is it better?
But you've got two teams that you need to see the exact same thing against.
IPFW gave up 96 to Utah on Saturday. That's your opponent.
So shoot for under 96.
No. If you're Indiana, you think 96 is going to be easy to attain offensively and just keep going. Utah 7-1. McNeese State, I'm guessing, just by my complete stereotype, would be they're probably 1-6 and not very good because you know why we've scheduled them. That's how I connect those dots. But what Indiana needs to do, if a guy's not performing defensively, what's the next step there? Is there one? Because the Hoosiers have made so much wear on offense. They're number one in 100 categories in the Big Ten. Scoring, assists, field goal percent. Do you take that guy? Do you want to perfect or get better at defense or just let that really good offense be good?
I'm speaking from left field now.
That's
a little
right.
Bit,
that's where
but I know
where
the greatest motivator there is, and
the
we
bench.
All know the bench.
And we didn't bring you in to talk about IU basketball, but here we are.
Exactly right. For coaches, and I remember Bob Knight, I mean, he was great about that. The greatest motivator you have is the bench.
And when you don't have other guys that can fill that time off the bench, you saw, for example, in Saturday night's game, it's Morehead State. Indiana's up 41, Dave? 13 minutes ago, second half. I'm going off the top of my head here. OG Anibody plays 4 minutes in the game.
Yeah.
When are you going to get freshmen better if they can't be playing up 41 at home? If he's injured, they don't tell us that. I don't know that. He played 4 minutes.
McNeese State is 1-5.
Oh, I said 1-6.
You gave one more loss than they deserve. Don't
they'll
do
get
that
one
to
on
them.
They'll get one on this weekend.
Oklahoma,
but the point is,
LSU.
If OG Anibody is not hurt, he's playing 4 minutes in a 41-point game.
Yeah.
Are you saving him for at Michigan? Are you saving him
I think the interesting question there is,
then he's not doing
his
job?
You've seen bad stuff on one side of the ball at minimum. Isn't a glorified scrimmage when you're supposed to be dealing with that and getting extra work in on that? I mean, I know where you're coming from on that. You're exactly
play,
right. But
why
play six walk-ons for 15 minutes in that game down the line just to get guys into that game when you need the time in that game with the guys you got?
OG played 4 minutes. He's a recruited athlete. And, again, you play this schedule to figure out who can do it in the Big Ten. And I hope he's not hurt because Juwan Morgan's already out.
McNeese State beat Dillard by 1 point.
That's a department store.
Yes, it is.
Housewares, line two.
Lovely jacket section.
Well, it is.
Got to take a quick break.
Straight jacket for Hoosier
fans. We'll talk IU football going bowling and the NCAA
playoffs.
There we
go. Happy thing.
When we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone of Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, we're with you until 7:45, where we'll take you over to pregame, the national pregame on Westwood One of Monday Night Football, which kicks off around 8:30. Dallas at Washington tonight. We'll be back with you, of course, on Wednesday night. Joining us tonight, Joe Novak, my dad, but
coach.
Also former defensive coordinator here at Indiana under Bill Mallory and head coach at Northern Illinois. So we're moving over to something you actually know a lot about, and that is Indiana football and Indiana football going bowling all of a sudden. Second time in 20 years or 22 years or whatever it actually
21
has been. 22. But, you know, it's been a struggle this year. It was a hard Big Ten season. There's no question about it. But they won their last two. And the Hoosiers won their last two on the road. And
right.
And you'll remember this even back, you know, when you were coaching and winning some games here. It was still really hard to win road games in the Big Ten.
It always is. You know what? The bucket in a bowl game at IU. That's a good
way to
year.
Go.
Darn
that's exactly right.
Right.
That makes
kudos.
December talk show a lot more fun than usual.
Don't forget that bucket.
No.
That's important.
That's three in a row. That's the first time since the late 40s that's
right.
happened. So that's been an exciting
awesome.
Time. And good things come to teams that work hard and win football games. And we talked basketball a little bit earlier, but in football, you know, the line is even finer because you don't have as many chances. And
right.
that game where the fourth and two call doesn't work and the guy trips and falls here, the call doesn't go your way, you can't say it's only December 3rd and get two
right.
more months to
mm-hmm.
dig yourself out of it.
You don't have 29 more to play.
Whew.
No, down 21-3 in the first quarter of Maryland.
Your season's on the line.
IU's yeah. got to change
your
it now.
1,500-yard back is done for the season
yeah,
almost.
Exactly, yeah.
Your safety, the only guy with any experience in your
is
secondary
out.
Is
right.
out. What do? Well, you give it to number 8, the quarterback that wears that number. What is he, 6'7"? Whatever
yeah.
it is. And in the last two games,
make
he throws for
did.
8 touchdowns. That was the number that was stuck in my head. Runs for 2 more mm-hmm. and has 0 turnovers on the road in the Big Ten where you have 2 must-win games. Yeah, that's why he's important to this, and that's why Indiana, when he was out against Penn State, we saw the offense struggle. They struggled with play calling. They struggled with philosophy. They struggled with everything because they didn't have their big quarterback and didn't have their big running back. But when the chips are on the table, Joe, there's only two things you can do. You stand up and you get counted or you get run over. And I think for Indiana football fans, we had seen more of the former instead
right.
of the latter over the last 10 years. And when you went on the road, the last two, you'd say the schedule makers did you a favor. It's Purdue and Maryland. Thank you. You're
right.
still in the position. You
still
have to win
chance.
The games. 101 total points, yep. I think, to get all the plaudits yep. they could deserve.
You know, I was here for the Michigan game, and I was
that
impressed.
Was a great game.
I was impressed. You know, I thought the offensive line played well.
Yep.
That running back's pretty good.
Yep.
And that second run, Redding kid, he's not too bad either. Quarterback yep. played well. There's some skill on offense. I thought the defensive front was pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
They struggled at times, I think, in the secondary. But, you know, a lot of people do that. But I was impressed. And, of course, obviously they had their chance to win that football game. And Michigan's a pretty good football team.
They played 6 true freshmen at one point
yeah.
or another. In the defensive
they
backfield.
Had 6 that yeah. were injured
yeah.
and defensive so, backs
I mean,
at one point.
Clearly that's – what. Talk about that a little bit. I mean, youth versus experience, especially on the defensive side of things, because I've always told people on offense, you know where the play is going,
right.
or at least where you think
right.
it's going. You know what you're doing. On defense,
right.
it's read and react,
right.
and the experience, how important is that on the defensive
side? No question.
Side?
Like you said, it's reaction. You're sitting there and you're waiting and you react, and the more you've seen that picture or what's happening – the better you react to it. And the only way you get repetitions is through time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time. And, of course, game experience, you can't beat that. You can practice all you want. Game experience is still a different level. But certainly, you know, the young kids, you live with them. Hopefully they get old. Hopefully you keep them
right.
in school and you develop them and they get to be older.
And
but
you
your
fruits.
Good football teams are senior, junior oriented, and that's usually the case.
Well, and the other point we saw earlier in the season, some of these kids were making some plays because they are athletic. They are better than some of the kids that have been here in the past, and that's good recruiting. The coach
right.
deserves credit for that. But it was just interesting to see the sea change. change when you got in the Big Ten. It's like they they watch some film. Yeah. These guys watch a lot of film.
Yeah. And you know the other thing that's changed in the last 30 years too, the schemes on offense are really difficult. And boy, you have a weakness, boy, and they see it on film. I mean, the coaching nowadays offensively has really stepped up. 30 years ago, it was tight formations. Yeah. It was 11 guys in a phone booth, and it was the tough guy won.
Well, talk about
that way.
Because it used to be more risk management on offense, and you wouldn't mind taking a shot down the field. But there's a play action, you got one guy in the thing, and you send him 60 yards down the field and tell him to go run and get it. But nowadays, I mean, from their own 5 yard line, they're in spread formations, and they know they're going to get those points back.
They've taken a game that used to be 11 on 11 in a phone booth, and they spread it out. Mm. So now it's a lot of one-on-one matchups. You look out there and you see that wide receiver, and you see that he's 6'4", and that little cornerback is 5'10", guarding him. We got us a mismatch. I've seen more balls go deep now in a quarter than we used to throw in a season.
Right.
But there's a reason for it. You know, like you said, there's risk. It isn't always complete, but you're going to hit some of those.
But isn't that the interesting part of the evolution of the game? Because in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it was you could name the seven teams that were really good because they had the tradition. They'd get the biggest and the strongest.
Sure.
And people, just like an evolution, would say, well, we're tired of running into them.
Exactly.
We're going to run around them.
You're right.
That's
great equalizer. It really is. The bubble screens. You look at a bubble screen, it ends up being 2-on-2 on the perimeter. And if your guy, you got one blocker, the ball carrier, and two defenders. If your guy gets a block, now you're 1-on-1 in the open field. That wasn't the way it used to be in football. You had to block nine guys to have a good running play before. Now it's all isolations and it's one-on-ones, and it's more truly, as we say, like basketball on grass.
Well, let's not forget as well, every rule in football has been designed to help over the last 20 years.
Offense
and scoring.
So on the defensive side, though, you're going up against all these crazy schemes.
And I mean, nothing's in your favor.
Does it make sense to do the risk aversion, if you will, on defense and just hang back and try to tackle everybody in play, or does it make more sense to just try to commit forward, be aggressive, go after the quarterback, and take your lumps if you need to and get the ball back to your offense and see if the next time you don't get to him in time?
Again, and I'm speaking as a guy who's not coaching anymore,
but I
think you have to try to make some plays on it. I look at Michigan State's defense over the last several years, and you know, they were always very aggressive defense, a lot of zone blitzes, but trying to make a play. If you let them go, you know, first down, second and five, third and two, you're not going to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a big play in there defensively sometime to stop, or a turnover or something like that. And like I said, it's really tough to play defense nowadays, and so much isolation and one-on-one. And if you got a mismatch somewhere, they're going to find it. And offensive coach. And the other thing that's different from when I first started coaching, back in the old days, what did the quarterback do? He took the snap, he turned around, he handed the ball to Anthony Thompson.
Yeah.
And then the quarterback ran and got the heck out of the way.
Yeah,
he was a non-factor.
Yeah, he's 11
on 10. Now, your quarterback, this is really single-wing football. For you guys, you guys don't remember single-wing, but you snap it directly to one guy, he can throw it, he may carry it. Now, if he's going to carry it, he's no longer out of the play. The ball carrier now becomes an extra blocker for you. So there's really advantages now. And that's why I say truly, I'm glad I'm not coaching anymore, because I don't think there's a great answer other than to try to gamble on defense, try to make a play to, you know, to get it to second and long, third and long.
Don't fans need to – if you – what the point we try to make with Indiana's defense is, be situationally good every once in a while. You don't need to be the 85 Bears or whatever that is.
They're going to put points up. You know that.
Teams are going to score. It's just when there's a third and 13, I'm not asking you to get every third and one. That's too hard to do. But third and 13, just do your job.
Yeah. Do that.
To keep it simple and try to get off the field. Why? To give your offense another chance to go down.
No question.
Well, how about contrast that, though, to a team like Iowa? And Iowa does a little bit of blitzing. But in large, they sit back with two safeties a lot of the time. I mean, they're talented, there's no question. But why are they so successful being less aggressive, it seems, than other teams?
Because they're good. Alabama's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You look at them, they're able to defend a run with seven guys in a box. They don't have to bring their secondary involved.
Which doesn't open up any home runs.
And there aren't too many teams that can do that anymore. And the other thing, too, with the spread, you know, right away I think people think spread, you think throwing the ball. Your spread teams
run
the ball very, very well. In fact, they run it more than they
throw it. Baylor was over 350 yards a game, I believe,
running.
there's room to run.
But yeah, exactly. You spread the field out, and
there's
now you're, instead of going
angles.
11 on 11, it's 6 on 6. And just like basketball, it's easier to score playing 2 on 2 than it is 5 on 5.
That's right.
It's the same thing in football.
And
you
Indiana talks
blocks.
The same way in basketball. They are more efficient when they do what? They spread the court offensively because they can't, you can't guard
right.
sideline to sideline. There are room, there are options. And the same thing, 45 yards across the field. Well, it's a long way to go.
Yeah,
if you spread six guys out across that, now you've got options. And I think the other point where the defense gets hurt, too, is one-step throw it. You don't need Dan Marino back there. You need kid that's capable and accurate, not a kid that's otherworldly.
Right.
Everybody can play now.
You're not putting it into the phone box.
And what do they, Coach, what do they do all summer in high school? They play 7-on-7, right?
I was just going to bring that up, Glass. That's the other big change I've seen for the last 20 years. These kids throw it and catch it all year round. And even in, you know, in the winter time up here, kids are doing it in the gyms and all that. In the South, they're doing it all year. That wasn't the case years ago. These kids now are good at it. They understand the schemes, the theories. They work on it. They throw it better. There's quarterbacks. The kids catch it. You got 6'4 receivers out there. I mean, there's more skill than there was 30 years ago.
And they're specialized even more so then, too. I mean, not everybody plays three or four sports like they used to. I mean, you have some.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I watched the South basketball team. There's one kid that came over from the football team to play on the South basketball team. It's a bunch of good athletes on the football team. But
you go down to Texas and you walk out there any time of the year, they're out in the field. They're 7-on-7.
Job.
Well, it'd be nice to be 60 degrees in January,
too. But
they can take advantage of that.
Is that why we have 82 bowl teams, or why? Because everybody can play a little
bit
these days?
Indiana is one of those bowl teams.
Hooray.
And we'll talk a little bit about going to a bowl and what it means when you're trying to put your program together in just a couple minutes. 333-2665 is our phone number. Back shortly. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass, News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Joe Novak joining us tonight, former defensive coach and Indiana coach. So it's all falling into place tonight as the Hoosiers have received a bid to the Pinstripe Bowl, the New Era Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium, which, Glass, you know a little bit about Yankee Stadium.
I haven't been to the new one, but I hear it's real nice.
Well, now's the time for IU fans to check it out. They will play Duke. This is year five of Kevin Wilson. We've talked a lot on this show about what's gone right and gone wrong for Kevin Wilson in 5 years, but here's the key. He's 6-6. He's got a bowl game. What does, when you're building a program, because you were here, you know, with Indiana, but you also did it at Northern, what does having that kind of success, and I know 6-6 to a lot of people doesn't sound like great success, but that bowl game, what does that mean in college football when you tell people you went to a bowl game?
It's monumental, I think. It really is. All recruits want to hear that, certainly. You're going to be in a bowl game. I know people complain about 40 bowls. Let me tell you something. For the teams, the kids, every bowl is a great bowl. Everyone, it's a reward. And from a selfish point of view for a coach, as we all know, it's about 15 more practices. Mm-hmm. It's an extra spring ball. And it's not so much for your present team. It's for those young freshmen and sophomores that haven't got a lot of attention because they're not playing much. You get a chance to work with them. And then that leads into spring ball. And it just gives you a chance to make that next big step. And it's such a positive experience. And, of course, alums love it. But you can't put down any bowl game anytime. They're a great experience for the teams, the players, and the coaches.
Well, talk real quickly about the difference between recruiting when you've got a bowl in your pocket as opposed to you haven't been to a bowl in 8 years and only once in 20.
Kids want to hear bowl games. I mean, they want to hear that.
Right.
I mean, that's just thrown out there so much by the media and everybody. They want, if you're not going to bowls, that's a real downer. It really is. To walk around with all due respect, to put that bowl ring on and flash that around, that's real important in recruiting. Kids want to play, you know, think that they're going to have a chance to play in a bowl game.
And it's a lot easier to tell a kid about the bowls you've been to than the ones you're going to go to.
That's exactly right.
At least get them to believe it.
The selling point is, and this is where Coach Wilson will reap the fruits of the labor, is not see I told you, but see we believed we could do it.
Right.
And he has put, well, anybody that's been listening to him in the last recruiting period or so can't say, well, he's full of it. Nah, they went out and did it, and I think that's back to your point why it helps. Do me a favor and ask your friends at the NCAA one question. You have the haves and the have-nots.
I don't know if I have friends there yet.
Well, you're not gonna make them if you ask this question either. If we want it to get better, the student-athlete experience to get better, why don't they let everybody practice during the quote-unquote bowl season? Why do they only let the bowl teams do it? Because based on what you just told us, that is always going to keep the have-nots one step behind. I know it's not socialism. I know it's not everybody gets a trophy, but you would think in an inclusion, participatory, non-amateur league for the NFL that everybody would get a little bit better.
You're right, Glass, and I've thought about that all the years I was coaching. When we weren't in bowl games, we said that's certainly a big advantage. By the same token, while those teams are practicing for their bowl games, the other guys that aren't in bowl games are recruiting.
Sure.
And they need to do that. Yeah, obviously, if they're not in a bowl game, you get a little jump on recruiting, and that's a plus from that aspect. So there's give and take.
Yeah, it's like this. It's the never-ending circle. You go out and you're recruiting, telling guys why you're not in a bowl game, and then you're trying to get to the bowl game.
Right.
But that is interesting.
Before we leave the college football in general, because we'll talk more about the committee on infractions when we get back from this next break, talk a little bit about the playoff and how it flushed out. Do you like the playoff the way it is, and do you like what it came up with this year?
You know, I'm a ex-coach, but I'm really a fan too. I love college football. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my passion. It still is, and I love it. I'd like to see an 8-team playoff as a fan. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be ideal. You could take your conference champs and pick the next three best team, whatever, however you did it. I'd like to see an 8-team, but as a coach, to me, that's too much football. These are college young men. I know they're physically big and gifted and all that. They're not pros.
How about the fans paying three quarterfinal, semifinal, championship game? That's $1,000.
Not knowing for sure.
People say, oh, it's just 16 games. 16 games. We used to, when I was playing in college, we played nine.
Yeah.
We played nine. And every year, not every year, every 5 years, 10 years, we bumped it up for money. Mm-hmm. Another game is more money. And like I said, these are college kids. 15, 16 games to me. And you can talk about the 1AA's playing that many. That's still too much football for a college
kid. I notice they haven't increased the number of scholarships in probably
20
years.
No, exactly right, Dave. That's the next thing they ought to do.
Can't have it both ways.
No, you're right.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We will be back after the top of the hour. Of course, Monday Night Football, 7:45, but we got more to come. We'll talk to Joe Novak about the Committee of Infractions, his new gig that he's starting out here in the near future, and what all that looks like when we get back. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. We're with you until 7:45, where the national broadcast, the pregame for the national broadcast of Monday Night Football takes over. Dallas at Washington, kickoff just after 8:30. We'll be back with you Wednesday night, but tomorrow night, Joe Smith Sports Talk, live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana. He'll have Ray Lewes, the IU men's and women's swimming coach, to talk some swimming. It's December, so naturally you're talking swimming. He'll also have the Herald Times' Andy Graham to talk about the IU Bowl and for high school basketball. So that's picking up. And, of course, we'll have high school basketball back on the air south at Southport Friday night. Chalk Talk, 7 o'clock, and tip-off, 7:30. 333-2665 is our phone number. Joining us tonight is Joe Novak, former defensive coordinator here at Indiana under Bill Mallory and Northern Illinois head coach also. And you have taken on this position with the Committee of Infractions for NCAA. I think people hear Committee of Infractions with the NCAA, they think, investigations and all this sort of thing. What led you to this job, and what is it that they asked you to do?
What are you doing? Are you out there investigating? Are you going through data heaps and trash piles looking for facts and figures? What's going on over there?
I think my wife wanted to find something to do.
She's listening, by the way. So
brother, I better watch. No, I'll tell you what happened. Make a long story short. I was having lunch with the commissioner of the Mid-American Conference about a year and a half ago. I was up in Cleveland for a thing, and we had lunch together. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm retired. I love college athletics. I love the Mid-American Conference because I went to Miami. Mm-hmm. I played there. I coached there. I coached at Northern. I spent a lot of time in the league. And I said, if there's ever anything you think that I could do to help, I was really trying to push for a TV gig. I was trying to get one of those. He didn't take the bait on that one. I guess I have a face for radio. Oh. But that didn't work out. But about 9 months later, I got a phone call. He said, would you be interested in possibly being on the Committee on Infractions? I said, I don't know anything about it, but yeah, I said, I've got time. Well, I didn't hear anything for about 3 months, so I just kind of figured, well, that was in and out. I wrote a letter indicating why I wanted to be on it, and last April I got a call, and they said, you have been selected.
Well,
I said, great. So I went and had a training session in August, and I went through that. I've observed a case now. I went in person. I just sat and watched. I've done one over the telephone, and I'll tell you what, I really enjoy it. It's interesting. It's a hard job. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of the committee is to try and keep a level playing field to make sure that we do have a police force out there watching for people that are doing things. And it's an unpaid group. It's 21 people right now. It could go up to 24. On any particular case, we have 5 to 7. There's 3 of us that are retired, a retired football coach, retired basketball coach, and a retired AD. The rest of the people are still basically employed. We have 2 university presidents. We have 2 ADs. We have conference commissioners on it. We have some independent lawyers. We have some university councils on it. It's a very diverse group.
You have to, because if you have a guy that's from this school and their school's in trouble, you got to have a group over here that can look at them with an equal.
So we have 21. They could kick it to 24. Any particular case has 5. The number is usually 7. They like an odd number, so when they start to deliberate.
Got to have a vote, baby.
But the Committee on Infractions, to make a long story short, what we do is there's an enforcement staff that is paid by the NCAA. Mm-hmm. They are a lot of ex-legal people. Their job is to go out and investigate. Knock on wood, let's hope we never have a situation here in Bloomington. But if something happened down here, the enforcement staff would come down and do their job. They would interview, try to follow up, see if there is something there, and what do? They write it up, they come back, they say, okay, we've got some situations here that need to be looked at. Mm-hmm. And then you've got 3 different grades of how serious the violations are, 1, 2, and 3, with 1 being the worst, 2 being obviously in the middle, and 3 are some just piddly things that a lot of times there's no even penalty for. But if the case is bad enough, then it comes in front of the Committee on Infractions, which is us. I sat and observed one, and I'll tell you, you don't want to go in front of that group. You really don't.
It's not like the IRS?
It is. We sat in a room, and there were probably 40 people in the room. On one side was the enforcement staff of about 8, and they presented the case. On the other side of the room was the university and the coaches involved, and they had about 10 people there. And I guess in some of these cases, they really lawyer up. They bring in outside counsel. I mean, it's a serious – the president of the university was there, some vice presidents, several legal counsel, compliance person. In the front of the room is the Committee on Infractions, and we sit up there, and, of course, we let the enforcement staff present the case. The university defends himself, and then the committee then kind of takes over. Mm-hmm. And we sit there, and we question whoever, whenever, anything. We can question the enforcement staff.
So it's like a congressional hearing.
It is, exactly, mm-hmm. Glass. Very, very similar. And then when it's all over, and the one I sat in on took all of 9 hours. We sat there with a lunch break, but we sat there for 9 hours. That's all that one took. Some of them, they say, take 2 days. But we went then after that. We immediately went up to a room. The people that were involved, and again, I was just observing them, but the people involved sit there, and for 3 hours they deliberated, went through each charge, decided the degree of guilt, and then they had to come up with the punishment. And the punishment is pretty well gridded. You know, if it's a recruiting thing, here's what we've always – to try to keep it consistent.
Precedent.
So it's pretty well thought out, and they're always checking on that to make sure it's good. But it's a very interesting thing. I'm not going to give you names. It's publicized. Somebody wants to know who's on the committee. They can find it out. But it's an impressive group.
Yeah.
Why I'm on it, I'm kind of like a schmo over here in the corner. But there's an impressive group of people. Well, you'd be amazed, some of the people. And they all have an interest in college athletics. But they don't all have an athletic background. So that's why there's a retired basketball coach, retired football coach.
So they can make heads and tails of what – here's how it goes
exactly.
On. If you don't know the intricacies behind it,
exactly.
That's stuff you can't find in the guidebook.
We had a question asked, just to give you an example real quick. Sorry. We had a situation where a coach was observing summer workouts and keeping attendance. And these people were just irate about that, and rightfully so. That's wrong. And I said, well, you know something? If those kids are on campus, I can guarantee you the coach knows who's there. He may not be keeping attendance, but he darn well sure knows who's showing up and who's not. I said, you know, yeah, that's part of the whole deal. So I think we're there to give a little perspective, you know,
right,
from an athletic point of view. But it's an interesting group. It's a high-powered group, and it's amazing to me because there is a lot of reading. The cases I've read, I had over 300 pages of reading to do, and some were more than that.
Let me ask you a question. How many cases are lined up? Is it a lot? Is it a little?
It varies, Glass. They really set aside about 3 days in the middle of each month, and they say keep these dates clean. And if you're available, you may be chosen to be on the committee.
So it's like jury duty.
Yeah, you may have two that month. Last month we got canceled. They came in and there was nothing there. So you're available. They'll let you know about 6 to 8 weeks out ahead of time.
So this is very organic and happening as we – this is not
–
they don't have a pile over here they have to get through.
No.
It's just
no.
It's as
and
they
when
come
we
up.
Get together, it's again, it's the more severe things. You're not going to get called in front of the committee for handing out Snickers bars.
Sure.
I mean, it's something
cream
really
cheese
serious.
On the bagel.
Yeah.
All right.
We've had that
pretty
before.
Serious. And like I said, if you're a coach – like I said, I sat in just one in person. It's not a fun thing. I mean, you're talking about your career in some cases.
Well, talk Absolutely. A little bit about that. We're talking to Joe Novak, who's a former defense coordinator here at IU and under Bill Mallory and head coach at Northern Illinois on the Committee of Infractions now, just starting out. But talk a little bit about that because you were a coach. You weren't in the position of having
right.
to go in front of the NCAA.
Right.
But I think people, when they hear the NCAA and they hear the rules and allegations and things like that, I think they tend to think, oh, that's all a joke. It's, you know, the heck with that. They end up, you know, getting rid of the penalties at the end of the day anyways. But for the coaches in the situation you observed,
yeah.
I mean, what's the pressure on them at that point in time, and what are they going through, do you think? And is it a bigger deal than maybe we think it is? Because a lot of people right now don't think the NCAA has many teeth.
Jim Tressel's under show cause at Ohio State for what he had to go through. And I know Jim. He's a great, great, great guy and a good football coach. But he made a mistake, and he lied, and he tried to cover it up.
That's
He's
the worst
on
part.
Show cause for 5 years. Mm-hmm. That means the university that would hire him has to give reason. They got to show what they're going to do to monitor him. And blah, 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 blah. It's hard to get a job. I mean, you're talking about a career situation. And if it doesn't keep you from getting a job, you've always got that on the back on your resume, and it's not right. pretty. The university, if they're on probation, they've got to put on their website, we are presently on probation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's when you get the university president.
The scarlet
involved,
letter.
Yeah, it's a serious thing. And like I said, it's not a pretty thing. And remember, a lot of these things that come up, these violations, most of them actually are self-reported.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The university self-reports.
Because if they don't, they're in more trouble.
Exactly.
They have the compliance
exactly.
department.
So that's
trouble.
What they're there for.
Right.
I got turned in once for handing out Snickers bars as a reward. And we all laughed, but I mean, that technically, I guess, was a violation. Yeah. I cut it out.
Yeah.
But I mean, some of it's that, and we self-reported that.
Yep.
And they, you know, they said, okay, don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
That was it. But when you get into this serious stuff, like I said, it can be career-altering for the coaches, for the universities. You're losing scholarships. If you don't play in the NCAA basketball tournament for a year or two, you're losing a lot of money. I mean, it's a real serious thing. And I'll tell you, the university people take it real seriously mm-hmm. because it's a black mark on their
Well, mind. And they do this day and age. The old joke in the 80s was the NCAA would get so mad at Kentucky, yeah. they'd put Cleveland State on probation,
yeah, exactly
where
right.
they would only look in certain
right.
places to find things. It's good to see that it evolves and has gotten a little bit better.
Jim Boeheim is the most recent one. I'll talk a second about that just because
put
that's already been.
And put the North Carolina academic thing on there.
I can't talk about that one because I haven't come to talk about it. But,
all
but
the ones that have happened, guys.
Boeheim, he's losing a lot of victories. Yep. Da-da-da-da, and, of course, nine games he had to sit out. But, and there is an appeal process, and that's what Jim went through. He appealed that suspension, and they changed it, of course, where he's not doesn't have to sit out all those ACC games.
We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be back to talk more Committee on Infractions with Joe Novak. And back in just a couple minutes, Stephen Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Joe Novak joining us tonight, former defensive coordinator at Indiana University and head coach at Northern Illinois, is retired and now on the Committee for Infractions for the NCAA. So part of the judges and the jury at this point. You mentioned they'll send you a bunch of stuff heading in. I know you've told me off the air we can't talk about specifics that are upcoming
right.
or that you're in the middle of, but you've got an assignment at this point in time,
right.
so you know what's coming. When they give you this information, what kind of information are they giving you? How much do they give to you guys the rules that are in question and all the rules around it, or are you supposed to know that big rule book the way you were supposed to when you were a coach?
First thing they gave me was the NCAA rule book. So we're supposed to carry.
But did they tell you to read it, or can you leave in the library?
Well, you're supposed to have an
idea. Did they give you a Sherpa to carry it around with you?
No, we got that book. And then, of course, the biggest thing is when a case comes up, and you're going to be a part of it about three, 4 weeks ahead, or as soon as they can, the enforcement staff will write up the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And the one case I have observed, there was over 300 pages in there to read. And some of it's dull, to be honest with you, but it's all about the case, and you got to go through it, and a lot of legal terms, and you got to make notes. And like I said, I'm retired, so I've got time, but there's a lot of commitment. And most of these people on this committee, like I said, are full-time university employees of some type and very, very, very busy people. One guy's a dean of the law school. Like I said, there's faculty reps. There's presidents of university. I mean, what kind of time do they have? And mm-hmm. to prepare and do the things they have to do to be a part of this committee, there's a real commitment on their part.
Now, I hate to make this sound horrible. I don't know an easier way to make this sound good. You guys, there's some retired people on there. There's some people who have been in business or in athletics or whatever it is for a long time. This is a committee that's some people that are not, mm-hmm. 20 and 30-year-olds doing this with coaches that are probably younger people also. What's the environment like if you're in this committee and kind of looking down on some young coaches who are out there, especially if you know what they've been through, at least how hard they got to work at their job?
The thing I was impressed with this committee, Dave, was these people are on it because they're interested in college athletics. Mm-hmm. We've got one lady who's a lawyer, and she's out, not with the NCAA. She's on her own, but she was a college athlete. So most of these people, even if they're not been in the athletic sphere, they've been around it. They're interested in it. That's why
you get to borrow Condoleezza Rice after the bowl season is over with. Bring her on.
But like I said, these people, I mean, there's some sharp people on there. And like I said, the coaches have one perspective. These people have a different one. And that's healthy. And that's good. And sometimes I think maybe the coaching end of it, the guys that have been in athletics, maybe we're a little bit too lenient in some ways.
Yeah.
And these people are a little bit more right down the middle of the road. So it's interesting, like I said, but all these people are there. There is no pay. It's all volunteer. So God bless them. They're doing it because they believe in it. They're in their best intentions in their heart. You may not agree with what they come up with, but like I said, they're trying to do the right thing to make college athletics better.
And when you're on the 5 to 7 or whatever it is on any individual case, that day that you're hearing this, or a couple days that you're hearing this, are you expected to, as a group, kind of retire to a separate office or a separate room and then deliberate over what's going to happen? Are they guilty? Are they not guilty? Yeah. How guilty are they? What's the punishment?
When it's
what
over.
Do we think it should be? That's all up to you guys at that point.
Exactly. The committee, let's say 7 is the usual number. We get together when the whole thing's done. We go up to a room. They bring food in, and we sit there until we're done. We go through each charge. There might be 2 charges. There might be 15. We go through, all right, here's charge 1. What do we think? Is it a level 1 violation, level 2, level 3? Go to the next one, and we discuss it. Some people think this way. Some people think that way. That's why we have
an odd
number. We have a chairperson, yes.
So each group of 7 will have. Show.
Yes, we have a chair, and they run it. But like I said, we discuss it. We make a vote. And we come, all right, in first charge, we think it was a Division I classification. Mm-hmm. Then we go to the next charge and so on until we're done with that. Then after we're done with that, okay, what should the punishment be? Da-da-da-da. If it's a recruiting thing, they're probably going to lose some scholarships. If it's an ineligible player playing, they're probably going to forfeit some games. And like I said, there's a grid that's pretty that handles.
Nobody's
that
reinventing
pretty well.
The wheel, right?
No. We're not just pulling it out of the air.
And do you have any kind of reasonable, beyond a reasonable doubt, criteria that you are supposed to be going under here?
Sure. Yeah, and again, we question the enforcement committee, too. We want to know why this happened or that happened. What was this about, and what's that about? And then, of course, you always get the other side from the university and the coaches, too. And, you got to decide. It's like any jury. Are they telling the truth? Are they, is it a little bit off? You just have to sit there and weigh that out, and you just do the best you can with it.
Now, you're in a room with the guy's lawyers, too. How much of an argument are the accused able to make at this point? Is it mostly procedural, or are we talking, the jury cases you see on television where the lawyer sits up there and makes some big impassioned? Are they able to do that sort of thing, or is it mostly sticking to the facts?
It's not a jury trial. You don't bring witnesses in. The witnesses spoke to the enforcement committee.
Right.
They're not at this hearing.
There's no cross-examination.
Exactly.
Here's the last question.
But I tell you, and they use the term lawyer up. Some of these people, and I'm sure Syracuse did, to be honest with you. They said they did. They brought in a like four or five lawyers out from the outside. They have their university counsel, but they got four or five more from the outside. They spent a ton of money to defend themselves because this was a big deal. It obviously
Do you
is.
See some of the same lawyers for the different institutions? Because they're on, I don't want to say the circuit, but you in the past when universities have had problems, they'll hire this guy in this firm because he's dealt with the NCAA before. You'll probably get to know some familiar faces down the road.
It's too early for me. I can't say that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
They'll be coming up down the road. You'll see some familiar faces. Hey, it's a racket.
Well, we got to take a quick break, and trust me, we will try to convince you to get Kentucky on the docket here real soon. We've got a couple minutes to cover that before we come back from the break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL, heading towards the national broadcast of Monday Night Football, Washington and Dallas. That's come up here in just a few minutes. Still have Joe Novak with us, former defensive coordinator at Indiana, head coach at Northern Illinois, and just taking a gig here as an unpaid gig, we found out. I don't know how you manage that, but on the NCAA Committee for Infractions. They're at least reimbursing your travel, I hope.
They do that.
Because they got you going all over the place. But we're talking off the air. We've seen this, and we saw this at Indiana. They self-reported their violations, which happened under Kelvin Sampson, and then they started to add on their own penalties, things they were going to do right away. What does the grid look like, or is there part of the grid for we're self-punishing and how that might do something?
Well, one of the things when we start to go through for the punishment, you say, what have they done anything positive to solve this? And one of the things for people that self-report, like you said, with basketball here a few years ago, you self-punish yourself. Maybe you say, we're not going to the NCAA tournament, or in football, we're not going to a bowl game. If the university does that, that's looked on favorably.
Do they have to show also, here's what we're also doing to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Exactly. And then we may say, okay, that's great, that's a start, but we're going to add this onto that. Or they might say, okay, that's fine, that's good enough. But as opposed to somebody who might try to cover up the violation or not, we had one, there was no cooperation from the school. Well, that's looked upon negatively. They're going to hammer you even more so. So it's like anything else. If you're involved in it, tell the truth and bring it out. Don't try to hide it. Cooperate, and you're going to be looked upon and dealt with a lot better.
Do people sometimes think, and wrongly so, but do they think, well, the NCAA doesn't have any subpoena power. The NCAA doesn't have a million investigators. I'm going to try to sneak this one under the rug.
Well, I can't speak for people, Glass. I'm sure that's probably the case. I know coaches sometimes, because they're not aware of the seriousness sometimes, they might try to fudge a little bit. And I think that's what happened with Jim Tressel over at Ohio State. And like I said, he's a great person and a great human being, but he tried to cover that up a little bit, and boy, he got hammered for that reason.
It just makes it sound so much easier if people come in proactively and say, look, we screwed up. Here's what we did. We're not sure how to go about it from here, but we know we've goofed. Help us out.
Exactly. And that's looked on very favorably.
Sorry, talk a little bit about the appeal process, and I know you don't hear the appeal, but someone else does. But, the NCAA or the NFL situation with Robert Goodell, he's had a lot of appeals that have blown up in his face. So how does that work with the NCAA, and how does that look?
We have one gentleman on our committee who is in charge of the appeals. He does it by himself. That's what he does for a living, and that's his job. So just like with Boeheim, Boeheim appealed his suspension. They just reduced it within the last week. They didn't reduce the number of games, but they did it to the preseason games and three ACC games, as opposed when he was going to be suspended for nine ACC
just
games.
The conference.
So that's what he asked for, and the appeals guy granted that. So you do have a chance to appeal. It might get changed a little bit. It might not. It depends on how he does. But that's his job on the committee, to hear the appeals.
Well, you were a coach in the NCAA for around 30 years. Again, there's a cynicism from a lot of fans about the NCAA, and especially about the rules when it comes to the NCAA. Your experience so far on this side of things, are people dead wrong? Does it make sense that they're cynical? What do you think about it from that side?
Better now
that you've seen the other side, because we don't see the other side.
It's a hard job. And that rule book is so big. And they keep talking about going through the rule book and trying to cut it back. There's just so many like I said, if you're involved in athletics, there's rules in there you don't even know
it's
about.
It's a tax code.
It is. It's awful from that aspect. But this group and the NCAA, again, the whole idea is to try to keep a level playing field. That's what it's all about, and trying to do our best to make sure that these kids and these schools are on a level field, and that's what they're doing, and that's what this thing's all about.
And the tough part is the perception, because that's what the reality is. Yeah. People that don't want – if people think you stink, you're going to stink, yeah, whether they get into the facts and figures.
But, you know, it's always easy from the outside.
Right.
The same thing with coaching, and I was a coach for a long time. You wonder why this isn't happening or that. Well, you don't always know the whole story of what – that kid might have a situation. He might be suspended or might be – you don't know. It's always easy from the outside looking and say, why isn't that happening? But maybe there's a lot more going on that you might ever know about,
right,
and not be aware of.
Absolutely.
When you were coaching, I mean, did you think that it was this sophisticated? Was this eye-opening to you to hear just
was? Again, the caliber of people that are committing time, to be honest, the enforcement staff and how they work at it, it's pretty thorough. Like I said, I'm not going to say it's perfect. I don't think anything's perfect, but they know what they're doing. They know what they're trying to do, and it'll be constantly changing, I'm sure. Like I said, the rule book will be changing. They're always trying to review the methods that they're doing, is trying to make it better. In fact, they're having a meeting here in the next few weeks. There's a group getting together to try and say, how can we do this even better than we're doing it now?
You know, it has to be complicated when major universities create departments for it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And spend
like
a lot of
parking,
money.
Yeah. Like admissions.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah. Thanks, Coach.
Joe Novak, my dad,
joining
us to talk about
Wednesday.
The Committee of Infractions. He's on it now for at least 2 years, and maybe we'll invite you back after that. But the music means we have to head on out of here, and we'll be back Wednesday leading you into IU's next cupcake game on Wednesday night. We'll talk about
frosting.
Talk about the Colts' big loss at Pittsburgh also on Wednesday night. So join us then, folks, 6 o'clock on Wednesday, and we will talk to you later. You've been in the zone.